To me, a Liberty ship was one of the lifesavers of World War II. What would they have done without Liberty ships? We won the war.
It is not a luxury thing at all, Liberty ship. They were made for a purpose. They carried materials, supplies, and troops to Europe.
The Liberty ship, a tubby, ugly duckling of a ship, became the symbol of the American home front's contribution to World War II. They were christened with the name Liberty ship when President Roosevelt promised that these vessels would bring liberty to Europe. Welcome to the Homefront Veterans Oral History Project. WMPG and Portland Harbor Museum collected 35 interviews with former workers at the Liberty shipyards in South Portland, Maine. I'm Stephanie Philbrick, and in this edition, we'll hear workers talking about the beginnings of the shipyards and just how important the Liberty ship was in winning the war. Charles French and Nicholas Davis explain how the Liberty shipyards in South Portland were commissioned.
And I was working on hull number one, which was Ocean Liberty. And we built 30 ships for Britain there before we ever get into maritime ships.
Because Germany had declared war on England in 1939, you remember, September 1939. The English had their back right against the wall. You know, remember after Dunkirk and all that? So they had to have supplies, and we had the Lend-Lease Act. And they were going to, you know, ship all this stuff to England and take care of them because it was just smart for America, because if England fell, the next thing you know, Hitler would be trying to figure out a way to get to us.
The present rate of Nazi sinkings of merchant ships is more than three times as high as the capacity of British shipyards to replace them. It is more than twice the combined British and American output of merchant ships today. We can answer this peril by two simultaneous measures. First, by speeding up and increasing our own great shipbuilding program. And second, by helping to cut down the losses on the high seas.
Oh, yeah, they had a contract with Great Britain to build 30. The U.S. government had an agreement to build 60, but we built 30 of them. Then after that, we built 237 more for our own U.S.
As Franklin Emery explained, 60 ocean-class vessels were built for the British government before any ships were built for the U.S. 30 of these ships were built in South Portland in just over 15 months. The neighborhood known as Ferry Village was chosen as a good site for the shipyards because it fronted a deep harbor. It was ideal for building ships, but when the new yards were built, they displaced homes and businesses that had been there for generations. Frank DaCosta and Belle Graney grew up in Ferry Village. They explain the transition from quiet neighborhood to an industrial complex.
I think it was a perfect spot. There had been a shipyard there. The land was all pretty much open. There were a few old shipyard buildings there, which, of course, they tore down. And, of course, the harbor out front was deep. Great big tankers went by there all the time. They were down there surveying and stuff like that. And then we started to see these great big trucks coming into the area, trailer trucks with great big piles of motors and gear on them. And they would park overnight right in front of our house. This was right toward the end when we had to get out of there. And they came and appraised all the houses up and down the street, and within a short time, we had to vacate. Some houses were moved up on top of Meeting House Hill. Most of them were torn down.
We were a population of probably 15,000 in South Portland, maybe not even that much. And 30,000 people came to work in the shipyard. So those people had to find a place to park their cars. And some of them were just commuters. Others had to find a place to live. So a lot of the homes in Ferry Village, the people rented rooms to the shipyard workers.
They came from all over Maine. That place was just a booming. We had three shifts. I worked from 3 to 11, but there was a shift, day shift, and then we'd cook and make sandwiches for the third shift. We're at war.
One of the main things that impressed me the most was the size of it. You know, and the people, a lot growing up, I had never seen more than 300 or 400 people at a time on the same type of work.
When the war broke out, the American industrial system swung into action to supply our allies with the equipment to win the war.
Up and at them, Yanks, with planes and ships and tanks.
Happy to have jobs after struggling through the Great Depression, workers flocked to the South Portland shipyards from all over Maine and New England. Many were unskilled workers, as Frank Bonville explains.
No training. No, they just took you in and you learned on the job. At that time, it was a ship-fitter helper. And they said, do you know anything about boats? And I said, nope. So he said, would you take a job as a ship-fitter helper? And I said, what's that? And he said, that's building the boats. And I said, all right.
My name is Nicholas G. Davis, Jr., and I went to work at the shipyard the 1st of November, 1941. And I remember one time, it was funny, there was this fellow named Red. We called him Red. He was from Bath Ironworks. He was a regular ship-fitter, you know. And one time, there was two or three of us standing around waiting for orders, and he was up above, and he said, hey, one of you guys, grab a bar, he said, and take a couple turns on that turnbuckle. And we all looked at each other, and one guy said, what's a bar, and what's a turnbuckle? So he got kind of exasperated, and he said, oh, he said, I don't know how I'm going to work it with these soda jerks and clerks. I had to laugh because I was really a soda jerk before I went there, you know.
It was quite an operation when you think of all farmers doing that kind of work, people that never knew anything about building ships, and it took a while for them to gain experience and know what to do. And my name's Earl Bennett, and I was a ship fitter. The first day, I practically stood around all day. Nobody knew what to do, you know. They didn't have things coordinated. It was a kind of a madhouse. I can remember getting 65 cents an hour and just more or less standing around, not doing anything. But after a while, it got coordinated, and as time went on, we became more proficient. Ships got built.
I was scared to death. Because they had to try you out, you know, to show you how to weld. And he says, now, you know, you've got to go very easily. And the first strike I made, you know, and I said, what am I going to do now? And they said, well, keep going. So I kept going, and then eventually you get the hang of, like anything, you know, you start doing.
Well, you walked in, you wondered what the hell you were doing here. It was nothing but a lot of noise and people and pieces of steel and trucks and cranes, and you wondered if you were ever going to learn anything from it, what was going to happen.
Take all these people that welded in the Kendenta shipyard, were all from all over the state of Maine. Worcester County, some of them had never seen a ship or anything else. And they made shipbuilders out of them.
But when they first started building ships, you used to have four crews on a ship and about 30 men in each crew. And by the time they got down to 1945, they were just down to two crews, but doing the same amount of work.
You know, sometimes I wonder whether they ever get these first badges done, you know, but they did. They turned out a lot of Liberty ships there over the course of the war.
The Homefront Veterans Oral History Project is a joint project of WMPG and Portland Harbor Museum. This program was produced by Stephanie Philbrick. Funding was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Institute for Museum and Library Services. In-kind support was provided by the Shipyard Brewing Company. A special thank you goes out to Ted Jordan and his American History class at Cape Elizabeth High School. And of course, this project would not have been possible without the men and women who built Liberty ships during World War II. For more information about this project, or to hear additional clips from these interviews, click on the Rosie the Riveter icon on the WMPG website at www.wmpg.org.